morning. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 20th of May. All things political coming up the first hour of our program today. And Tim Murphy is our guest, reporter for the Washington, D.C. Bureau of Mother Jones. He has written, well, he writes a lot of interesting pieces. He's written about the history of how presidents in the past have used the IRS against people who may be considered political enemies. It's a time-honored tradition, he says. We will begin our conversation with that and with a question: will these three scandals, the IRS, the Associated Press, and Benghazi, be on the front burner all of this week? What in the world is it going to take for some of the issues that the administration would like to deal with? And those would probably be the budget and immigration reform. Gun safety may be off the table completely. But what would it take? Because we seem to be mired in these conversations. Is the administration at fault for not having, as one analyst said, a clear goal for what they would like to accomplish in the second term? And is there something about the style of the administration that keeps other legislation from moving forward, or is it just a heavy-duty opposition from the Republicans? So we will talk about all of that this hour with Tim Murphy. Tim did an interesting thing last year. He, last summer, logged 22,000 miles traveling around the country and blogging about his experience for Mother Jones. We may ask him about that during the course of this hour. And as always, we welcome your phone calls. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@WPR.org. And our Facebook page, if you would like to leave some comments there, is the Kathleen Dunn Show. Tim Murphy, hello. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Let's start with this interesting piece you wrote about, and you went president by president, FDR, JFK, Richard Nixon, Jimmy Carter, Ronald Reagan, and Bill Clinton, and how they used the IRS. Let's start with FDR. You say he maybe have been the originator of the concept of employing this agency as political retribution.
Yeah, and that actually is what his son Elliot said, if you can trust him. FDR, you know, gets a good reputation on a lot of things, but when it came to the IRS, he was kind of vindictive. He used it as a tool to go after his political enemies. He went after Huey Long, the famous governor and senator from Louisiana, who admittedly was sort of asking for it as a very corrupt politician, but they really kind of set the dogs on him. Herbert Hoover's Treasury Secretary came in for scrutiny from the IRS, sort of at the direction of Roosevelt's Secretary of the Treasury. The Republican congressman who represented Roosevelt's Hyde Park home was a frequent target of the IRS, and when the IRS failed, they sent the FBI after him instead. So he sort of had this power, and he felt like he was sort of entitled to use it.
The one who really used it was Richard Nixon, right?
Yeah, and Nixon is the name that keeps on popping up. You know, you hear anytime anything bad happens, generally folks will say, you know, this is Nixonian. And when you look at what Nixon did, you sort of realize that nothing that we've seen in the last couple of weeks really kind of rises to that level. Nixon felt like he had been given, you know, the reins to the IRS, and it was his tool to kind of wield as he saw fit against whoever he saw fit. So you have, fortunately, he recorded everything he said. So you have him sort of on tape asking, why are we not going off, you know, going against the Democratic, you know, senatorial campaign committee? We have the IRS. We can use this. And so he wanted to use it. He wanted to use it against George McGovern, his 1972 opponent. He wanted to use it against, you know, student groups. He wanted to use it against anti-war activists. And for the most part, he did.
And he audited Billy Graham, and there is a tape of his response to that. The IRS did. He didn't know what was happening, but he really, the language is unbelievable in that excerpt. He was pretty mad.
Yeah, he considered Billy Graham a friend. And, you know, the IRS sometimes audits your friends. And Nixon just thought this was absurd that they were using all of their political capital going after, you know, allies like Billy Graham when they could be going after, you know, student anti-war activists or Democrats or whoever.
So what do you make of this current IRS scandal? Is it a case of people in this Cincinnati office kind of acting on their own and not having much direction, and it's showing that the IRS needs to figure out what their workplace is a little bit better than they have? Or do you see this as something that potentially could go all the way to the White House where certain groups were targeted?
I think so. There's sort of a couple of different stories that we've seen so far, and some of it is still evolving. We can definitely say for sure that the IRS office in Cincinnati was dysfunctional, and I think you could say that the IRS itself is dysfunctional, and how that compares to other federal agencies isn't entirely clear. They felt like they didn't really have direction from Washington or from any of their superiors, and they had suddenly been dealt, thanks to the Citizens United Supreme Court ruling, there was in the Tea Party movement, there was this influx of new 501c4s. And they didn't know what to do with it, and so they kind of came up with this shortcut that amounted to political profiling. In terms of whether it goes up to the White House, that's less clear. I think the news today was that the White House Counsel's Office knew about it, but did not talk to the president about it. The kind of haphazard nature of it and the fact that they went after a lot of these kind of mom-and-pop conservative groups as opposed to kind of the really, big-time players like Karl Rove's organizations kind of suggests, I think, that it wasn't as, kind of maniacal or, top-down effort as it might be framed, in the conservative press.
Did they, Tim, go after liberal-leaning groups as well or not?
Not really. The Inspector General report that they came out with said, they went after, they kind of singled out about 280 groups all told, of which about 80 were specifically conservative, politically-minded groups, which is, a very high percentage for that kind of thing. And the progressive groups really did not come in for that kind of criticism at all.
And can you say that, well, it's a case of the Citizens United ruling really throwing this up for grabs, and the IRS, a couple questions, wasn't prepared, didn't have enough time to be prepared, or the other side of that is, should not the administration have been aware of what Citizens United was going to do to the application for nonprofit status for all of these appearingly political groups?
Yeah, and it's clear that they didn't really have a game plan. So they kind of came up with this kind of ad hoc, we're going to come up with a couple of keyword, buzzwords, Liberty, Tea Party, 912, I think was one of them, and we're going to apply that filter. And that's not, a very thorough filter because it leaves out kind of another side of the political spectrum. So I think the picture that you're seeing is they did not really have their act together.
And can you say that historically this is no big deal, or can you point to some of those other administrations where the IRS targeting certain individuals or groups did become a big deal?
I think that it became a very big deal in previous administrations. The role of the president is a lot more defined in some of the past scandals, and it is, of course, still early. But Nixon, Kennedy, Roosevelt were very kind of involved in the targeting that was going on with their IRS offices. Mm-hmm. But even, someone like Clinton, we don't have Bill Clinton on tape saying you need to go after, this conservative watchdog group. But the conservative watchdog group still felt like it had been targeted by the Clinton administration. And that kind of created this kind of very real, sense of paranoia and, activism and stuff that I think still kind of lingers and sort of became a part of the Clinton legacy.
Mm-hmm. Clinton evidently also audited parties like Jennifer Flowers, Paula Jones.
Yeah. There's kind of a long list. The National Rifle Association, the Heritage Foundation, and some of these folks are going to get caught up in the dragnet anyway. But if you put them all kind of together on a list, you can sort of see why conservative groups thought that there was something amiss.
Mm-hmm. And what do you think? You traveled all around the country last summer. What do you think the American public, the poll numbers for the president don't seem to have gone down at all. And yet most of the commentators are saying you've got to have trust in the IRS. This is a very big deal. You can't run a government with this kind of problem without people losing faith in the government. At the moment, at least, that doesn't appear to be the case. Why?
I think part of it is still early, and part of it is the president has, at least on some level, been kind of insulated. He was very quick to kind of come out and say this is, outrageous if true. It's interesting, and I think the American people are still kind of in a wait-and-see mode. If you look at the poll numbers, I think something like 55% of Americans say it's very important that we continue to ask questions about the IRS scandal, but that's different than saying they, think that the president is involved. They're kind of, waiting for the evidence to kind of come in, too, I think.
Mm-hmm. Benghazi, it doesn't seem to be going anywhere.
No, and that's another instance. If you look at the poll numbers for kind of the most high-profile person that's sort of wrapped up in that, I think, would have been Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. Her numbers have actually improved since the GOP really began harping on the Benghazi scandal. I think folks have, you know, maybe just because the story itself is so confused, they've sort of, you know, removed her from that whole kind of, you know, the hearings and the controversy.
And in terms of the Associated Press story, to me, this strikes me as probably one of the more significant stories here, because it's something that, you know, it's problematic on so many different levels. The press is important, and yet the American public doesn't have much faith in the press. So it seems to be one of the scandals that's not too much attention is being paid to it.
Yeah, this is the one I think you're least likely to see come up in the campaign trail, you know, this fall or in 2014. Partly because it's the press and partly just because it's basic civil liberties, which is something that it's always been pretty hard to get voters to really rally around, except in kind of, you know, very progressive, you know, primaries or stuff like that. I think the real scandal on that one that you're starting to see a few folks point out is just that it's not really that unique. We don't really know how often this happens, and the law doesn't require the federal government to disclose how often this happens. So we found out about it, you know, from the AP, but, you know, it actually could be fairly commonplace practice.
Mm-hmm. Well, there is so much attention already has been. You can rest assured that there's going to be a lot more attention in hearings and hearings and hearings on all of these, particularly the IRS. What it seems to do, and we seem to be at this state so often, is keep the Republicans and the Democrats from paying attention to anything else.
Although, yes, I would say, you know, very quietly, immigration has still kind of continued to move along in Washington. Today, there's another markup on the Senate's comprehensive immigration bill. And I think that might be kind of a unique case relative to a lot of the legislation that you have discussed in Washington, in that it has been kind of a legitimate bipartisan push. So while normally partisanship would just kind of emerge to totally submarine the process and talk about the scandals, you know, Marco Rubio has a lot invested in this process.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of Republicans who think that they need to keep on, you know, the wheels moving on immigration. So that has kind of been an exception, I think, to the usual standard operating procedures.
Are there other exceptions?
Not at the moment. And gun control, you know, kind of died right before we got into this whole scandal news cycle. And it doesn't show any signs of really emerging anytime soon. I think that was mostly because it was a dead political issue to begin with, and not so much because, you know, the conversation has shifted.
Yeah. Two phone calls in. We'll do that in just one moment. Our guest this hour for All Things Political is Tim Murphy. Tim is a reporter for the Washington, D.C. Bureau of Mother Jones. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Email is talk@WPR.org. Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hour two of our program this Monday, the Poetry Slam team from the Milwaukee High School of the Arts and MPS School won another national championship. We've been following this Poetry Slam for some time. There was a great documentary done a few years past, and we talked to the people who had put that together. We'll be talking with two of the performers and also with a coach. That's coming up hour two. This hour, All Things Political, and we go to your phone calls right now for Tim Murphy from Mother Jones, and let's start with George in Milwaukee. Hi, George.
Yeah, good morning. I missed the first part of this, but I'm not sure if your guest had mentioned this, but I was reading in the New York Times Sunday edition yesterday that the IRS was also looking at, with some scrutiny, groups that they called social injustice reform movements. So that would indicate that they were not just picking on the Tea Party people. They were actually looking for groups that they thought were taking unfair advantage of the 501c4 status.
Would you say that's true, Tim, but just not as many of those groups?
Yeah, you know, I didn't see that report in question. I think just from the sheer numbers themselves, I think that so 298 groups applied that they gave extra scrutiny to. 72 of those were Tea Party or 912 or something like that. So they definitely did over scrutinize the conservative groups. But out of those other groups, I don't know quite what the makeup was. you have, you know, there were some progressive groups, for instance, that did have their applications rejected, probably because, you know, their paperwork wasn't in order or anything like that. But sort of, you know, I think getting to the broader point, you know, historically and, you know, during the George Bush administration, for instance, groups like that, groups that were setting out to combat social injustice of some form, be it, you know, the NAACP or Greenpeace or whatnot, did sort of come in for extra scrutiny from the IRS. So, you know, historically, it's not something that only applies, you know, to conservative groups.
It was a very thorough article in the New York Times. It was a good one, wasn't it, George?
Absolutely. And another thing that I think was so interesting from that article was it shows how flawed the entire law was. You know, the IRS, the numbers of people that were looking at these applications, they had lost staff. They were under a tremendous amount of pressure to do a lot in a short period of time. They were looking for shortcuts to try to get at organizations that they thought might be trying to scam the system. And, of course, they also knew that there were larger organizations like Grassroots America, Karl Rove's group, that had already been pretty successful in being able to do it and still being able to claim that status and not having to disclose their donors.
Thanks, George, very much for the call. That office, I mean, it's amazing. They had 200 workers in Cincinnati going through 70,000 applications for exemptions each year. That's a lot, isn't it?
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's a product of they're kind of a victim of their circumstance in some respect, because that was the floodgates opened up by the Citizens United and other court decisions. And so all of a sudden, you know, what was, I'm sure, a busy job before then just became, you know, kind of an overwhelming glut of applications that they're dealing with, you know, not to mention the fact that all of a sudden you have this very politically motivated movement, you know, and now all of a sudden the Tea Party is out there and trying to take advantage of it. And so they just didn't really know how to respond.
Yeah. And a lot of people have called during the last week for an investigation of this 504 groups that have spent at least $500 million on political advertising during the last 4 years. Probably nobody's going to look at that, but doesn't it beg an examination of whether or not those should be nonprofit, you know, social welfare groups?
It really does. I mean, a group like Crossroads DPS is obviously very politically active, and it's, you know, just kind of looking at it, their goal is to help Republicans win elections, but that's not nominally their goal. And you know, they've got very good lawyers, and they've got ways around this. Mm-hmm. The thing about the IRS scandal is it'll make any kind of further investigation into that nearly impossible. There's no way at this point that the IRS is going to launch, you know, a really close examination of big time conservative 501c4s after what they've gone through.
Right. Right. George, thanks for the call. Ray in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi. What strikes me about this IRS controversy is the more money either a citizen has or a political group has or a business has, the more money they have at their disposal, the less this IRS system will look at them. Look at Bernie Madoff, look at Walmart, look at GE, look at all these corporations that absolutely get a pass. So what I see here is a mirror image, and people who make less than $30,000 a year get the largest percentage of audits, yet millionaires are getting away with God knows what. And I'd like to just touch on Benghazi. I'm a person on the left. I want to hear what really happened there. I heard the CIA might have been torturing people there, and that's why that place was attacked. But I find it ironic that the same senators and congressmen that did not want to look into the original 9/11, where 3,000 Americans died on our soil, are now worried about four dead overseas and are going crazy over it. Isn't there something hypocritical about that?
All right, Ray, thanks for the call. Tim.
Yeah, well, you know, speaking to the caller's first point, I think this really is an important case, an important thing to note when you're talking about the IRS, is they really do disproportionately go after folks who are not really in power. Kind of the more money you have, the less likely you are to feel the IRS's wrath. I mean, you just have the lawyers, you have the accountants, you're able to kind of, you know, navigate the system in a way that other folks aren't. And that's true of super PACs in the same way it's true of companies and individuals.
What about this $30,000? Most of the audits are people $30,000 a year or less. Is that true?
I can't speak to that precise number, but I think just as kind of as a general rule, that's the way it works. It's sort of the IRS going after the low hanging fruit and avoiding kind of the tougher cases, but the cases that I would say matter a lot more. You know, mm-hmm. if a company is cheating on its taxes and you know going offshore or something like that, that's a much more important public policy point.
Carl in Madison. Hi, Carl.
Yes, hello. I'm glad that the two of you are coming together. I really think the Kathleen Dunn Show and also Mother Jones do very important work and bring up important issues. I wanted to get the guest's thoughts on, you know, when FDR was really serious about going after the banks, you know, he went to the fireside chats and did the really full court press and was very direct and went directly to the people and was very successful in that area. And I feel like with the Obama administration, those of us who worked pretty hard to elect him, watching, you know, the number of drone strikes escalate, you know, the closing of Guantanamo that was so important has totally, you know, unraveled and went into a second administration. And I feel that, you know, the Obama administration, it feels almost as though these, whether you're on the left or you're on the right, so little is getting done and so little appears to be really forcefully attempting to be getting done in terms of real traction and real progress, that it feels as almost as though the, you know, the Democrat or the Republican is this shell, and then we all just get this bread and circus and, you know, constant distraction of these kinds of issues like the ones you're talking about today, but that really who gets served, regardless of who is in power, is the corporate elite, and Obama's actions in many cases seem to really, they don't reflect the kinds of conversation he was having that was trying to get the American people behind him when he was seeking election.
Tim.
Yeah, you know, getting to that point, I think, you know, politics is really frustrating for most people most of the time. And I think the Roosevelt example is kind of illustrative because while he was trying to implement the New Deal, you had a lot of liberals who thought that he was really ineffective and that he was kind of betraying the liberal agenda and sort of moving to the center a little bit. And in retrospect, that seems kind of silly because you look at the New Deal and all it accomplished. But it sometimes takes a little while to kind of look back and figure out what just happened. I think with President Obama, you'll look back at the first term and you'll see, you know, kind of the biggest, you know, healthcare reform in you know, five decades. And you'll see, you know, Wall Street reform, albeit, you know, perhaps watered down a little bit more than you'd want. And you'll see all sorts of other things. So I think he has accomplished a lot. I think maybe the issue, especially when it comes to his relationship with progressives, is that he might not actually be all that progressive. You know, when it comes to issues like the deficit or something like that, or the national security state, I think, you know, what you're seeing is actually the real Obama. And so in that case, he's not really, you know, it's not necessarily that he's, you know, letting you down or something. It's just, you know, this is who he is, and this is really what he wants politically.
Thank you, Carl, very much for the call. Robert Reich had an interesting comment about him that I read over the weekend. He said that he has become an easy target because of his eagerness to compromise and that he has not defined his core agenda. You think that's true?
You know, I think he has kind of broadly. I mean, he set out and he said during this first campaign that he was going to take on the banks and do health care reform, and he did that. And he said, you know, that he was going to push for immigration reform during, you know, the last campaign, and he did that. And he's, you know, outlined all sorts of other things, you know, clean energy and that kind of thing that he's pushed for and accomplished. Gun control, I think, might be a better example of that, because that just kind of came up. You know, and after Newtown, he decided that he was going to do gun control, and that was just kind of, you know, on a wing and a prayer, and it didn't do so well. I think for the most part, he has kind of articulated his agenda. It's just not necessarily the agenda that folks want or necessarily, you know, expected. So I think that comes, especially with Robert Reich, that comes up a lot in terms of the budget. You know, if he comes across as too compromising, it's perhaps, you know, because he is more center left, you know, than left on a lot of these issues.
Thanks, Carl, for the call. Kelly in River Falls. Hi.
Well, good morning. I'm sitting here with my May-June copy of Mother Jones and my May copy of The Progressive, and none of these scandals seem to appear anywhere. But I want to talk about the AP story and maybe a larger narrative where we've got the AP's reporters' stuff getting confiscated. We've got Bradley Manning in seclusion, hidden away from the world for leaking stuff. We've got Julian Assange basically a hostage in an embassy. And we've got the city of Boston shut down by the police. And I guess I want to know what Barack Obama's real mission is here with regard to civil liberties, because it seems like he's bound and determined we aren't going to have any. And I applaud Mother Jones for getting us a little clip of Bradley Manning's voice. Thank God, at least we know he's still alive.
Thanks, Kelly.
Yeah, I think Barack Obama's civil liberties record is definitely one of kind of the richest areas for criticism that he's had of since taking office. And I think it sort of speaks to the general nature of the national security state, where if you give these politicians the power, they're going to use it, and they're going to try and find out ways to get even more power out of that. You know, the scandal, I think I mentioned this earlier, the scandal with the AP phone records is that this is actually legal and that they don't even have to disclose this all the time it happens. So this could be even more widespread than we think. Congress, you know, it sort of falls on Congress to, you know, use its powers to keep a check on the executive branch. And they haven't really done anything, maybe some modest efforts during the Bush era that didn't really happen. And then, you know, during the Obama administration, you know, they haven't done very much at all either. It's just been kind of a continuation. So that sort of leaves you with what we've seen, you know, over the last year and, you know, with, you know, Boston, I guess, being kind of an unrelated situation, but, you know, going after the AP, going after, you know, Fox News even, in a more recent case, there's certainly a lot of questions there.
Here's an email that's come in. If it is assumed that the previous presidents used the IRS illegally, then it must also be assumed that President Obama also directed the IRS?
I don't think so. There's no indication at this point that Obama really directed the IRS to, you know, go after conservative groups or anything like that. We also don't have any, you know, paper trail of President Bush directing the IRS to go after the NAACP. We just have the IRS going after the NAACP. So, you know, in kind of every scandal, you're going to have to read a little bit between the lines, and it sort of depends on kind of where your, you know, suspicions inherently lie, I think.
Yeah. But when you look at those other administrations, can you point right to the top? You certainly can in Richard Nixon's case, but can you point to FDR saying he's the one really who was behind this?
It sort of depends. There are sort of different levels. So with the case of JFK, you can point to his attorney general / brother, Robert Kennedy. In the case of FDR, you can point to his secretary of the treasury, and then it becomes a little bit more muddled there. And, you know, he didn't record all of his conversations, unfortunately. How far you can take it all sort of varies from case to case. But Nixon is obviously the extreme example.
Yeah. Our number is 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. You are listening to All Things Political for this Monday with Tim Murphy, a reporter for the Washington, D.C. Bureau of Mother Jones. And we go to Jim in Milwaukee next. Hi, Jim.
Hi. It seems to me that in terms of contributions, that progressive Democrats have got to limit themselves to only progressive Democrats, because the party needs to man up and to deal with issues and link what's going on in the world to issues that are unaddressed because of all of these piddly-diddly things that the Republicans bring up. Every time we have a deadly storm, whether it be Joplin or in Shawnee, Oklahoma yesterday, or the hurricanes in New Orleans and New Jersey and New York, we pay for this, and we pay dearly. And yet, in the context of what's going on with the Democratic Party, we have problems getting the Republicans to even admit that there is a problem, and we see situations where no action is taken on these things. And in terms of the existing environmental and climate problems, the people are inadequately staffed and the programs are inadequately enforced. So we see ourselves as being continuously sold out, and if we're not going to have any action, there's no reason why we should give any support for centrist Democrats.
Tim.
Yeah, I think, you know, the kind of inability to really act on climate change is going to be one of the defining assuming it holds constant, is going to be kind of one of the defining takeaways from Obama's second term, where here you have this kind of existential, you know, crisis facing the planet, and you have a Congress that just doesn't want to do anything about it and doesn't, you know, even believe in doing anything about it. And, you know, that is, if you're, you know, if you're a Democratic primary voter, you know, that probably is something that you would take into consideration, is, you know, whether or not this person is going to act seriously. You know, the, obviously, you know, with every election, though, there's sort of, you know, the lesser of two evils argument, you know, and if you've got a centrist Democrat who's kind of, you know, ambivalent about climate change, and you have a Republican who thinks that it's the greatest hoax ever, you know, perpetrated upon civilization, you know, you sort of have your judgment to make. You know, the problem is that there aren't actually all that many, you know, really progressive Democrats out there, you know, running for Senate, running for governor. So you sort of have to, you know, make your choices.
Well, what do you do about that issue politically? Because a lot of people are saying that it is the issue of our times. And with the news of a couple of weeks ago, it would appear that attention must be paid, and it probably needs to be paid pretty soon as the world starts to industrialize and try to copy our standard of living, which in terms of the environment hasn't been very good and can't be sustained by the rest of the planet. So I don't know what you do to address this issue, which, you know, the vast majority of scientists say we really need to address this, be it through huge green energy programs or carbon taxes or whatever it is. And I was reading a piece yesterday that the president actually has it within his power to do executive actions, at least on some of these environmental issues. But it's a huge issue, and you run the risk of things getting much, much worse if nothing happens.
Yeah, and there's no question that it's, I think, the biggest issue of our time. And I think the number is 97% of climate scientists agree that this is a real thing that is happening and is going to have really serious consequences. I think maybe the bigger problem is that it's also kind of an even bigger problem for the next generation and the generation after that. And so it's, you know, there's kind of this inherent kind of procrastination behind doing anything about it. Policy-wise, there's always going to be one issue that is a little bit louder at that given moment, even if climate change is going to be this constant, you know, creeping, you know, threat to, you know, anyone in coastal areas or you know, rural areas or urban areas or really anywhere. So it's really tough to get, you know, any sort of action on it. And I think the fact that it is embraced mostly by one party and opposed by another party is a serious impediment, where folks just kind of start to view it through a partisan lens and not through a scientific lens.
Yeah, that certainly wasn't always the case. Richard Nixon was, I don't know if you could call him an environmentalist, but he did put through some major environmental legislation.
Yeah, he founded the Environmental Protection Agency. And, you know, even Newt Gingrich, going back to the early 1980s, thought that, you know, we had to take some serious steps to think about the future of the planet.
Mm-hmm.
We've obviously devolved a little bit since then.
Yeah. Just when the planet may need us the most, huh?
Exactly.
Jim, thanks for the call. Hugh in Milwaukee. Hi.
I want to get back to the IRS because one thing you haven't mentioned, and that is not only did the IRS under Obama target conservative and Tea Party groups, but some of the information they collected handed over to Soros-funded far-left-wing groups. Information was given to them so they could use it against the conservatives. So not only did they refuse to give the conservative groups the tax-exempt status for over 2 years and sometimes still running, they never were able to organize in a sense so that they could be used in elections. The left wing could, but the information gathered was given to their enemies. Moreover, some of the questions that they ask, like what prayers do you say, what books do you read, what congressmen do you contact, and so forth. These are outrageous.
Where did that come from? What prayers do you say? That was one of the questions.
Some of the organizations were asked that. They were given pages to fill out to try to get this tax-exempt status. And it was an outrage, and it is an outrage. And you can't say it's just the little guys doing this. This just goes to the top. FDR, your great hero, I mean, he was using the FBI against people. These heroes of yours are potential tyrants, and you don't see it because, oh, you agree with them. The point is that our government should not be doing this. And what happens when they have all of our medical records? You think, imagine a Republican who had Bill Clinton's sexual medical records. Don't you think this would be used against him? And if Sarah Palin gets really sick, she will be facing a death panel of left-wing IRS people. It's an outrage what we're going through.
Tim.
Sure. Well, there are a couple points there. I think the caller mentioned the IRS asking groups about the content of their prayers. So that was something I think the IRS wrote in a letter to the Coalition for Life of Iowa. And they, I think they were looking for the content of their public prayers. In the past, religious organizations have come under some scrutiny if, those prayers advocate for a specific candidate or something like that. So I think that might have been what they were getting at there. In terms of the leaking of IRS documents to political groups, we haven't seen anything like that. The IRS office, I believe, in Cincinnati did turn over some documents to ProPublica, which is a nonprofit, nonpartisan reporting shop based in New York City that does a lot of work on what we call dark money, these 501c4 political organizations. ProPublica was kind of looking into kind of the rise of these big groups and trying to collect as much, of a paper trail as they could. And, a lot of these documents are public record, and so they were able to get them. And so it's not clear whether the IRS office deliberately leaked them or really screwed up and violated public record laws and forked over confidential information.
Mm-hmm. What about this idea, and a lot of people have said this, that the IRS simply has to be above reproach. Even if it was done historically, shame on all of these people, you just can't do it.
Yeah, I think everyone who pays taxes and deals with the IRS would hope that they would definitely be above reproach. It's just a really big organization with a lot of people, and I think that's a really that should be the goal. But you just kind of have to expect something like this is going to happen, and when it happens, you want the government to respond mm-hmm. quickly and shut it down. In this case, the Washington office instructed the Cincinnati office to shut it down. And it's not clear that they did, stop doing that.
Hmm. More phone calls in a moment. Tim Murphy, our guest for All Things Political this Monday. He's a reporter for the Washington, D.C. Bureau of Mother Jones magazine. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. And our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Returning to phone calls now, let's go to Heather in Sun Prairie. Hi, Heather.
Hey, how are you?
All right, how are you?
I'm okay. I was actually going to call in, or I am calling in, but it's sort of the opposite point of the last caller. I guess the way that I look at it, because I'm a public employee, so if there's an organization out there that basically screams all the time how much they dislike public employees, want to shrink the government and basically have me lose my job. I mean, there's no grand conspiracy that comes down and tells me not to like it. It's kind of like, when you're biting the hand that has to take care of your stuff. I think individuals can easily develop their own likes and preferences, particularly with groups that are so loud and I guess. I feel very attacked by those kind of people, on a personal level, because I need to take care of my family. So I think it was probably just honest to goodness, personal responsibility, individuals who, you scream out, you hate the government, I work for the government, well, I'm going to look at your stuff, so...
Well, I think you may have a point there. I don't know if that's what happened, but it is, considering the political times, understandable, right, Tim?
Yeah, nobody likes to be told, that they're hated. But, at the same time, saying I don't like the IRS and I think the IRS should be disbanded and, eliminate taxes or whatever is still a viable or, it's a fine, political view to have, and you're, entitled to create a nonprofit organization to push for those ideas. So I guess there's sort of an understanding that if that's what you do, you should be treated the same way a group that, you know, wants to advocate for climate science or homeless shelters.
Thanks very much, Heather, for your call. Don from La Crosse wants to know if the U.S. military has a sexual assault problem. What's happening with our military when they're overseas with citizens of other countries?
Yeah, absolutely. There's no question, and I think it's a national disgrace, and I think hopefully more and more folks are starting to take note of that national disgrace. I think the documentary last year, I think it was nominated for an Oscar, if it didn't win, Invisible War, should shed a lot of light on that. And you're seeing more and more of that. You know, I think there was the guy who was charged with, you know, investigating sexual assaults at the Air Force was himself charged with the sexual assault. And due to sequestration cuts, the armed forces have had to cut back on the number of counselors and investigators that they're originally intending to hire to combat that. So this is a bad problem. It's getting worse somehow, and it's something that I think, you know, needs to be done about.
Yeah, it is just an incredible problem, isn't it? The people who are in charge of this wind up to have been sexual assaulters themselves. It's just, whew.
Yeah, the number I think was 1 in 5 women in the armed services will be victims of sexual assault.
Our number is 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. And our next call is Tom in Sabisky, Wisconsin. Hi, Tom.
Hi, good morning.
Hi.
One of the things that Mr. Rush, the former Secretary of Treasury, has talked about is how the Republicans, especially Cantor and Ryan, being that they're in the position of controlling the purse strings to most of the government, have underfunded a lot of the government programs, the IRS, which has contributed to a lot of these problems. In fact, they say that for every dollar not spent on funding the IRS, we're losing billions of dollars in fines and recouped costs from corporations and stuff. This has been underreported in the press and not really addressed. I was wondering what your feelings are about that.
Yeah, that's an interesting point, and it's something that you see with a lot of government agencies, is that they're ineffective because they're not funded, and that makes them less likely to be funded down the line. I think the best example of that is probably the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, which has, you know, been without a leader for most of the last decade because that leader has to be confirmed by the Senate. And you know, so as a consequence, you have fewer people doing more work. And in the case of the IRS, it's more work that's kind of going up exponentially with the rise of the 501c4s. And I think you saw that in the New York Times story and some of the other stories about the Cincinnati office, where they just felt like they were absolutely, you know, flooded with new paperwork that they had to do and just did not have the resources to do it.
Mm-hmm.
That leads to, you know, taking shortcuts.
Supreme Court, for a moment, we're talking about the book Bending Toward Justice Tomorrow, the Voting Rights Act and the Transformation of American Democracy. The Supreme Court has some pretty major decisions coming down in June, gay marriage decisions and also voting rights decisions. Do you know when those are going to be happening? And do you have any indication of where they're going on those, Tim?
I don't exactly. You know, with those things, you can always, you know, it's often kind of an optimistic, you know, reading of the tea leaves. In the case of the Voting Rights Act, I think a lot of folks kind of point to Antonin Scalia's really not that it's out of character, but his really outspoken, you know, comments during oral arguments as a sign that maybe he's trying to get his swings in now, knowing that he's on the wrong side of this. The same goes for gay marriage. So I think folks are maybe a little optimistic about both of those, you know, but it's a toss-up. And as you saw with the Affordable Care Act, I mean, these things kind of go down to the wire, and it can be something as simple as John Roberts, you know, having a hard time sleeping at night and wanting to be on the right side of history.
All right. Tom, thanks. Jane in Green Bay. Lines are open, actually, and we have a few minutes left. 800-486-8655. Hi, Jane.
Hi. This is from the Huffington Post. When Bush was president, George Jr., there were 13 embassies and consulates attacked in India, and this was in the early 2000s. 5 people were killed in Pakistan, 12 people were killed, and 51 were hurt. And in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, 9 people were killed. So So I think the Republicans should just shut their mouths about Benghazi.
Will they do that, Tim? Is it something that's not going anywhere?
I think it's going to take a lot of duct tape to get folks to shut their mouths about Benghazi. I think that's not going to go away for a while. But to the caller's point, I think that's a really interesting one, and it's one that we talked about at Mother Jones not too long ago in terms of just looking at the historical numbers of attacks on U.S. diplomatic targets. It actually peaked during the end of the Reagan administration and the first Bush administration, where you had, you know, upwards of 30 attacks in a given year on U.S. diplomatic targets. So what we're seeing now is almost an all-time low. Things have really gone down. We're actually much safer overseas than we, you know, have ever really been. And that's sort of a story that is missed out a little bit, is that larger historical context.
Mm-hmm. Do you think this story is on its way out, Jane, or not?
I wish I thought it was on its way out.
You think not?
They just glam on to anything to bash Obama with, it seems to me. But anyway, I'm going to hang up and let someone else have a chance.
All right, Jane. Thanks very much for your call. Our number is 800-486-8655, and we have lines open for you right now. Let's just talk for a moment about that trip you took, 22,000 miles. What did you learn? What did you learn about America, Tim?
Well, you know, it's a big place, and there's a lot of really awesome and eccentric people out there. Pretty much wherever you go, there's this basic kind of uniformity of, you know, decency and people taking you into their homes and you know, offering you, you know, a glass of sweet tea or whatever. So, you know, it was an amazing experience. And anytime, you know, you find yourself with 3 months to kill and a really cheap car you don't mind driving into the ground, I would recommend it.
So did you see these great divisions that are obviously being played out in Wisconsin as well, in Washington as well? Or did you see more that unites all of us?
You know, for the most part, politics kind of came in and out. It was kind of like a bad radio signal. All of a sudden, you know, you would be driving through Denver and there'd be a Tea Party rally or something. But for the most part, you know, that, you know, unless you're kind of on the internet, you know, that's not really your, you know, what you're exposed to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're just kind of seeing normal, you know, human interactions and people, you know, telling their own stories and stuff like that. So, you know, it's kind of, you know, it's reassuring in a way.
Right. Jane, thanks for the call. We have another Jane, Manitowoc. Hi, Jane.
Hello. I was hoping your guest would address the delays that the VA is experiencing of over 600-plus days in some places to get our veterans disability pay that will help them get through the therapy and everything else that they're going through.
Yeah, this is something that came up just a couple of months back. There's a big report on that, John Stewart. You know, The Daily Show had a really good segment just kind of exposing just how absurd this is. And this is the folks that we've sort of, you know, made a promise to, that we would take care of them going forward. And a lot of it has to do with just basic administrative failure. You know, they haven't, you know, these are records that are not kept digitally. These are records that are kept on paper, you know. And so there's literally a warehouse that is just this enormous, you know, stacks and stacks and stacks of veterans' records. It's the type of thing that, you know, you need to spend some money on and put them online and find a way for them to be much more easily transferable. You know, it's actually, and this is, you know, the point that was made, is it's actually much worse today than it was during the Bush administration when you had a lot of, you know, public criticism of what was going on at the VA.
Thank you, Jane. Joe in Tishigan Lake. Hi.
Hi. I'm calling with my disgust of the House and then Congress, Senate. They don't seem to have any time to confirm any of these positions that are unfilled, and there are so many positions that are unfilled. But when it comes down to anything that can go at the president, Benghazi, which is just a complete joke, and this IRS thing, they should investigate every nonprofit group. We as taxpayers are losing billions and billions of dollars that the groups that do not deserve to be nonprofits. And, I mean, this is just a complete joke. They have all the time in the world to go over Benghazi, but they don't have time to confirm anybody and leave all these positions unfilled. And, you know, here we sit with, you know, no budgets, you know, sequesters going on, you know, Meals on Wheels, you know, we have elderly that can't get out, that, you know aren't being fed. I mean, we're a disgrace to this planet with the actions we take.
Tim, we have about 15 seconds.
Yeah, I think, you know, Harry Reid has actually signaled July is the date at which point he'll really think about taking a nuclear option on kind of the unfilled vacancies. But that is kind of, you know, an untold story of what's going on in Washington and what has happened in Washington for really the last 6 years.
Tim Murphy, thank you so much for being with us. We had a good time. Tim Murphy, reporter for the Washington, D.C. Bureau of Mother Jones. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing the show. K.P. Whaley has joined our program as well. He did on-air production for us. Thanks to K.P. And as we continue on, welcome him to Milwaukee. Just a note for all of you who love politics. Tomorrow, Bending Toward Justice, the Voting Rights Act, and the Transformation of American Democracy, the author of that book, as the Supreme Court is about to give us a decision. And coming up June 5, Senator Olympia Snowe will be joining us on her book, Fighting for Common Ground, How We Can Fix the Stalemate in Congress.